"Send your guards down to the stairs foot," said Gandalf. "And you, lady, leave him a while with me. I will care for him."
"Go, Eowyn, sister daughter," said the old king. "The time for fear is past." The woman turned and went slowly into the house. As she passed the doors, she turned and looked back. Grave and thoughtful was her glance, as she looked on the king with cool pity in her eyes. Very fair was her face, and her long hair was like a river of gold. Slender and tall she was in her white robe girt with silver, but strong she seemed and stern as steel, a daughter of kings. Thus Aragorn, for the first time in the full light of day, beheld Eowyn, Lady of Rohan, and thought her fair, fair and cold, like a morning of pale spring that is not yet come to womanhood. And she now was suddenly aware of him, tall heir of kings, wise with many winters, grey-cloaked, hiding a power that yet she felt. For a moment still as stone she stood, then turning swiftly she was gone.
"Now, lord," said Gandalf, "look out upon your land. Breathe a free air again."
From the porch upon the top of the high terrace they could see beyond the stream the green fields of Rohan fading into distant grey. Curtains of wind-blown rain were slanting down. The sky above and to the west was still dark with thunder, and lightning far away flickered among the tops of hidden hills. But the wind had shifted to the north, and already the storm that had come out of the east was receding, rolling away southward to the sea. Suddenly, through a rent in the clouds behind them, a shaft of sun stabbed down. The falling showers gleamed like silver, and far away the river glittered like a shimmering glass.
"It is not so dark here," said Theoden.
"No," said Gandalf, "nor does age lie so heavily on your shoulders as some would have you think. Cast aside your prop."
From the king's hand the black staff fell clattering on the stones. He drew himself up, slowly, as a man that is stiff from long bending over some dull toil. Now tall and straight he stood, and his eyes were blue as he looked into the opening sky.
"Dark have been my dreams of late," he said, "but I feel as one new awakened. I would now that you had come before, Gandalf, for I fear that already you have come too late, only to see the last days of my house. Not long now shall stand the high hall which Brego, son of Eol, built. Fire shall devour the high seat. What is to be done?"
"Much," said Gandalf, "but first send for Eomer. Do I not guess rightly that you hold him prisoner by the counsel of Grima, of him that all save you name the Wormtongue?"
"It is true," said Theoden. "He had rebelled against my commands, and threatened death to Grima in my hall."
"A man may love you and yet not love Wormtongue or his counsels," said Gandalf.
"That may be. I will do as you ask. Call Harmer to me. Since he proved untrusty as a door-ward, let him become an errand-runner." "The guilty shall bring the guilty to judgment," said Theoden, and his voice was grim. Yet he looked at Gandalf and smiled, and as he did, so many lines of care were smoothed away and did not return.
When Harmer had been summoned and had gone, Gandalf led Theoden to a stone seat, and then sat himself before the king upon the topmost stair. Aragorn and his companions stood nearby.
"There is no hope to tell all that you should hear," said Gandalf. "Yet if my hope is not cheated, a time will come ere long when I can speak more fully. Behold, you are come into a peril greater even than the wit of Wormtongue could weave into your dreams. But see, you dream no longer. You live. Gondor and Rohan do not stand alone. The enemy is strong beyond our reckoning, yet we have a hope at which he has not guessed." Quickly now Gandalf spoke. His voice was low and secret, and none save the king heard what he said. But ever as he spoke, the light shone brighter in Theoden's eye, and at the last he rose from his seat to his full height, and Gandalf beside him, and together they looked out from the high place toward the east.
"Verily," said Gandalf, now in a loud voice, keen and clear, "that way lies our hope, where sits our greatest fear.
doom hangs still on a thread. Yet hope there is still, if we can but stand unconquered for a little while.
The others too now turned their eyes eastward. Over the sundering leagues of land, far away they gazed to the edge of sight, and hope and fear bore their thoughts still on, beyond dark mountains to the land of shadow. Where now was the ring-bearer? How thin indeed was the thread upon which doom still hung! It seemed to Legolas, as he strained his far-seeing eyes, that he caught a glimpse of white. Far away, perchance, the sun twinkled on a pinnacle of the Tower of God. And further still, endlessly remote and yet a present threat, there was a tiny tongue of flame. Slowly Theoden sat down again, as if weariness still struggled to master him against the will of Gandalf. He turned and looked at his great house.
"Alas," he said, "that these evil days should be mine, and should come in my old age instead of that peace which I have earned. Alas for Boromir the Brave! The young perish and the old linger, withering." He clutched his knees with his wrinkled hands. "Your fingers would remember their old strength better if they grasped a sword-hilt," said Gandalf.
Theoden rose and put his hand to his side, but no sword hung at his belt.
"Where has Grimur stowed it?" he muttered under his breath.
"Take this, dear lord," said a clear voice. "It was ever at your service."
Two men had come swiftly up the stair and stood now a few steps from the top. Éomer was there. No helm was on his head, no mail was on his breast, but in his hand he held a drawn sword, and as he knelt he offered the hilt to his master.
"How comes this?" said Theoden sternly.
He turned towards Éomer, and the men looked in wonder at him, standing now proud and erect. Where was the old man whom they had left crouching in his chair or leaning on his stick?
"It is my doing, lord," said Harmar, trembling. "I understood that Éomer was to be set free. Such joy was in my heart that maybe I have erred. Yet, since he was free again, and he a marshal of the mark, I brought him his sword, as he bade me."
"To lay at your feet, my lord," said Éomer. For a moment of silence, Theoden stood looking down at Éomer as he knelt still before him. Neither moved.
"Will you not take the sword?" said Gandalf.
Slowly Theoden stretched forth his hand. As his fingers took the hilt, it seemed to the watchers that firmness and strength returned to his thin arm. Suddenly he lifted the blade and swung it, shimmering and whistling in the air. Then he gave a great cry. His voice rang clear as he chanted in the tongue of Rohan a call to arms.
"Arise now, arise, riders of Theoden! Dire deeds awake! Dark is it eastward, let horse be bridled, horn be sounded, forth Eorlingus!"
The guards, thinking that they were summoned, sprang up the stair. They looked at their lord in amazement, and then as one man they drew their swords and laid them at his feet.
"Command us," they said. "West, O Theoden Hall," cried Éomer. "It is a joy to us to see you return into your own. Never again shall it be said, Gandalf, that you come only with grief." "Take back your sword, Éomer, sister son," said the king. "Go, Harmar, and seek my own sword. Grimur has it in his keeping. Bring him to me also. Now, Gandalf, you said that you had counsel to give, if I would hear it. What is your counsel?" "You have yourself already taken it," answered Gandalf, "to put your trust in Éomer, rather than in a man of crooked mind, to cast aside regret and fear, to do the deed at hand. Every man that can ride should be sent west at once, as Éomer counselled you. We must first destroy the threat of Saruman, while we have time. If we fail, we fall. If we succeed, then we will face the next task. Meanwhile, your people that are left, the women and the children and the old, should fly to the refuges that you have in the mountains. Were they not prepared against just such an evil day as this? Let them take provision, but delay not, nor burden themselves with treasures, great or small. It is their lives that are at stake." "This counsel seems good to me now," said Theoden. "Let all my folk get ready. But you, my guests, truly you said, Gandalf, that the courtesy of my hall is lessened.
You have ridden through the night, and the morning wears away. You have had neither sleep nor food. A guest house shall be made ready. There you shall sleep when you have eaten."
"Nay, lord," said Aragorn, "there is no rest yet for the weary. The men of Rohan must ride forth today, and we will ride with them, axe, sword, and bow. We did not bring them to rest against your wall, Lord of the Mark. And I promised Éomer that my sword and his should be drawn together."
"Now indeed there is hope of victory," said Éomer.
"Hope, yes," said Gandalf. "But Isengard is strong, and other perils draw ever nearer. Do not delay, Théoden, when we are gone. Lead your people swiftly to the hold of Dunharrow in the hills."
"Nay, Gandalf," said the king, "you do not know your own skill in healing. It shall not be so. I myself will go to war, to fall in the front of the battle, if it must be. Thus shall I sleep better."
"Then even the defeat of Rohan will be glorious in song," said Aragorn. The armed men that stood near clashed their weapons, crying,
"The Lord of the Mark will ride! Forth, Eorlingus!"
"But your people must not be both unarmed and shepherdless," said Gandalf. "Who shall guide them and govern them in your place?"
"I will take thought for that ere I go," answered Théoden. "Here comes my counsellor."
At that moment Harmer came again from the hall. Behind him, cringing between two other men, came Grima the Wormtongue. His face was very white. His eyes blinked in the sunlight. Harmer knelt and presented to Théoden a long sword in a scabbard clasped with gold and set with green gems.
"Here, lord, is Herogrim, your ancient blade," he said. "It was found in his chest. Loath was he to render up the keys. Many other things are there which men have missed."
"You lie," said Wormtongue, "and this sword your master himself gave into my keeping."
"And he now requires it of you again," said Théoden. "Does that displease you?"
"Assuredly not,
lord," said Wormtongue. "I care for you and yours as best I may. But do not weary yourself or tax too heavily your strength. Let others deal with these irksome guests. Your meat is about to be set on the board. Will you not go to it?"
"I will," said Théoden, "and let food for my guests be set on the board beside me. The host rides today. Send the heralds forth. Let them summon all who dwell nigh. Every man and strong lad able to bear arms, all who have horses, let them be ready in the saddle at the gate ere the second hour from noon."
"Dear lord," cried Wormtongue, "it is as I feared. This wizard has bewitched you.
Are none to be left to defend the golden hall of your fathers and all your treasure? None to guard the Lord of the Mark?"
"If this is bewitchment," said Théoden, "it seems to me more wholesome than your whisperings. Your leechcraft ere long would have had me walking on all fours like a beast. No, not one shall be left, not even Grima. Grima shall ride too. Go! You have yet time to clean the rust from your sword."
"Mercy, lord," whined Wormtongue, grovelling on the ground. "Have pity on one worn out in your service. Send me not from your side. I at least will stand by you when all others have gone. Don't send your faithful Grima away."
"You have my pity," said Théoden, "and I don't send you from my side. I go myself to war with my men. I bid you come with me and prove your faith." Wormtongue looked from face to face. In his eyes was the hunted look of a beast seeking some gap in the ring of his enemies. He licked his lips with a long, pale tongue. Such a resolve might be expected from the lord of the House of Eorl, old though he be, he said. But those who truly love him would spare his failing years. Yet I see that I come too late. Others, whom the death of my lord would perhaps grieve less, have already persuaded him. If I can't undo their work, hear me at least in this, lord. One who knows your mind and honours your commands should be left in Edoras. Appoint a faithful steward. Let your counsellor Grima keep all things till your return, and I pray that we may see it, though no wise man will deem it hopeful." Éomer laughed. "And if that plea doesn't excuse you from war, most noble Wormtongue," he said, "what office of less honour would you accept? To carry a sack of meal up into the mountains, if any man could trust you with it?"
"Nay, Éomer," "You don't fully understand the mind of Master Wormtongue," said Gandalf, turning his piercing glance upon him. "He's bold and cunning. Even now he plays a game with peril and wins a throw. Hours of my precious time he's wasted already. Down, snake!" he said in a sudden, terrible voice. "Down on your belly! How long is it since Saruman bought you? What was the promised price? When all the men were dead, you were to pick your share of the treasure and take the woman you desire? Too long have you watched her under your eyelids and haunted her steps."
Eomer grasped his sword. "That I knew already," he muttered. "For that reason I would have slain him before, forgetting the law of the hall. But there are other reasons." He stepped forward, but Gandalf stayed him with his hand.
"Eowyn is safe now," he said. "But you, Wormtongue, you've done what you could for your true master. Some reward you have earned, at least. Yet Saruman is apt to overlook his bargains. I should advise you to go quickly and remind him, lest he forget your faithful service."
"You lie," said Wormtongue.
"That word comes too often easy from your lips," said Gandalf. "I do not lie. See, Theoden here is a snake. With safety you can't take it with you, nor can you leave it behind. To slay it would be just. But it wasn't always as it is now. Once it was a man. And did you service in its fashion? Give him a horse and let him go at once, wherever he chooses. By his choice you shall judge him."
"Do you hear this, Wormtongue?" said Theoden. "This is your choice? To ride with me to war? And let us see in battle whether you are true. Or to go now, whether you will. But then, if ever we meet again, I shall not be merciful." Slowly Wormtongue rose. He looked at them with half-closed eyes. Last of all he scanned Theoden's face and opened his mouth as if to speak. Then suddenly he drew himself up. His hands worked. His eyes glittered. Such malice was in them that men stepped back from him. He bared his teeth, and then with a hissing breath he spat before the king's feet, and darting to one side, he fled down the stair.
"After him!" said Theoden. "See that he does no harm to any, but don't hurt him or hinder him. Give him a horse if he wishes it."
"And if any will bear him," said Eomer. One of the guards ran down the stair. Another went to the well at the foot of the terrace, and in his helm drew water. With it he washed clean the stones that Wormtongue had defiled. "Now, my guests, come," said Theoden. "Come and take such refreshment as haste allows." They passed back into the great house. Already they heard below them in the town the heralds crying and the war horns blowing. For the king was to ride forth as soon as the men of the town and those dwelling near could be armed and assembled. At the king's board sat Eomer and the four guests, and there also, waiting upon the king, was the lady Eowyn. They ate and drank swiftly. The others were silent while Theoden questioned Gandalf concerning Saruman.
"How far back his treachery goes, who can guess?" said Gandalf. "He wasn't always evil. Once I don't doubt that he was the friend of Rohan, and even when his heart grew colder, he found you useful still. But for long now he's plotted your ruin, wearing the mask of friendship until he was ready. In those years Wormtongue's task was easy, and all that you did was swiftly known in Isengard, for your land was open, and strangers came and went. And ever Wormtongue's whispering was in your ears, poisoning your thought, chilling your heart, weakening your limbs, while others watched and could do nothing, but your will was in his keeping. But when I escaped and warned you, then the mask was torn, for those who would see. After that Wormtongue played dangerously, always seeking to delay you. To prevent your full strength being gathered, he was crafty. Dulling men's wariness, or working on their fears, as served the occasion. Do you not remember how eagerly he urged that no man should be spared on a wild goose chase northward, when the immediate peril was westward? He persuaded you to forbid Eomer to pursue the raiding orcs. If Eomer had not defied Wormtongue's voice, speaking with your mouth, those orcs would have reached Isengard by now, bearing a great prize. Not indeed that prize which Saruman desires above all else, but at the least two members of my company, sharers of a secret hope,
of which even to you, Lord, I can't yet speak